All right.
Hi, Charles.
How you doing, man?
It's great to be back. It seems to be a busy day. There are so many interesting people at ICSI this year that, in some sense, I have to introduce many to you.
Thank you.
This time I'm here with Danny Dick. And Danny comes from the Department of Computer Science at University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. And so, Danny, most people know you for your refactoring work. What's going on in refactoring these days?
So, welcome everybody. Thanks a lot for inviting me. And refactoring has made it really big, made a big splash this day. And it's such a broad and it's such a... it covers so many topics that it would be very, very hard for me to talk about everything.
Yeah.
So,
what are you passionate about? What do you think is the most exciting in refactoring today?
So, what is my personal passion in refactoring today? Of course, it's the multi-core revolution. So, this is very close to my heart, and I'm looking at this from a refactoring approach. So, we have to take some sequential code. We have to make use of parallelism and multi-core threading if you want to squeeze performance, if you want to enable new kinds of services and applications that were not possible before. And one approach is, well, let's throw all this code away and rewrite it from scratch. But I'm talking to you guys and you're already laughing because I can't imagine somebody throwing away the Visual Studio code, sequential code, or
good point.
The Office, you know, 50 million lines of code. So no, the only practical way that I see right here is incrementally converting sequential code to parallelism. So you know, to me, this is a perfect example of a refactoring. You want to preserve the current functionality, yet you want to improve some aspect of your software. So in this case, you don't want to improve the design, you want to improve the performance while preserving the current functionality. So it's a clear example of refactoring.
Okay, I think I understand that. But let's say if we want to parallelize an arbitrary loop, so we can introduce data parallelism, we can introduce task parallelism, maybe we can introduce a parallel link instead of link. So but whenever you do introduce parallelism, you can introduce race conditions, you can introduce deadlocks. So how do you actually deal with it? It's not a simple rewrite, right? Because you have to really understand the program in the first place.
Correct. So this is these are some very good observations. So we have all these amazing libraries that are making the life of programmer easier. So Microsoft has this great library, TPL, Taskbar library, and P-Link. You know, if you look in the C# world, if you look in the TPB, in the C++ world, you know, we have TPB and then Concert from Microsoft. So in some sense, you know, these libraries are helping the programmer, but then when it all comes to the end of the day, the libraries are hiding away some of the complexity, which is dynamic load balancing, and the programmer still has to reason about what are the interactions between loop iterations. Am I writing to shared memory? Am I only reading from shared memory? So the kind of tools that we do for loop parallelism, actually the process is that the programmer selects. So the programmer has this high level domain understanding. This is a loop that makes sense to run in parallel. It's compute intensive. And the programmer knows that it's mostly the loop iterations are doing mostly independent work of each other. Then the programmer points the tool to this tool, and then the tool finds whether these loop iterations are accessing any shared memory and any shared variables, and are finding what are the shared accesses and what kinds of, do you have writes accesses, you only have reads accesses. It finds writes accesses to shared memory, then it's clearly an example of arrays, and it pinpoints to the programmer, these are the variables that are involved, and much more than that is, okay, here I have a shared variable, and this is why it's shared between the loop iterations. So is the allocation site, and you know, it passed through many, many functions, you know, it passed into this loop, and then the race actually doesn't happen in the, you know, it happens in the loop, you have a call chain, and five levels down from the loop body, then you are writing to some shared state. So it kind of like shows you a full slice, it's a combination of a slice and a control flow. It shows, okay, this is the object which is responsible for the race, and this is how it made it into the body of the loop.
Okay.
And this is how it's going to be accessed in parallel.
So then one way to mitigate that might be to introduce a lock for it, or maybe to replicate that state and merge it later. So then you have all the refactoring, different refactoring. So first, every refactoring has then this kind of precondition. Only under those assumptions you are allowed to do this refactoring.
Correct.
And then sometimes you now have special refactorings to establish that the precondition is is established for the refactoring. Is that correct?
Right. So in this case, in the loop parallelism, the precondition would be that, you know, the loop iterations are iterating linearly over the array. For example, you don't skip iterations because when you run it in parallel, when you give it to a library, like the for each in C sharp or the parallel array in Java, then the library will iterate over all the iterations. And then another precondition is that you're not writing to shared memory variables. So the refactoring tool establishes all those preconditions and checks all those preconditions. In case that they are not met, then it shows some very good information to the programmer. And then it's up to the programmer to decide how to get rid of the failed precondition.
Yeah, yeah.
And as you said, there are many, many choices. You can use some, you can reorder the statements, you can use some private variables and then merge the result back into some global variables. You can go, you can synchronization and logs. There are many, many choices. This is the part which I'm very excited about, and this is where we're moving next, beyond the classic refactoring. So in refactoring, you have a transformation. These are the failed preconditions shown to the programmer. The programmer has to fix them.
But
in this case, you know, this fixing is essentially a very complex search because you're searching along two dimensions. On one dimension, you have a thread safety. On another dimension, you have performance.
Now
you start tweaking with this, and your code is thread safe, but you know you kill all the performance of your parallel loop. What we are moving into next, and this is again this is more futuristic. We are moving into a tool that usually does an automated search along these two dimensions.
And
you can come back to the programmer and can say, if you do these transformations and these other transformations, this is how you get the best optimal point. You get the best performance, and you get a thread-safe loop parallelism.
Okay, so I understand that in some sense, in the past, you have worked a lot in Eclipse. And Eclipse is nice because of what reason? What makes it easy to work for refactorings in Eclipse?
So I've been working in Eclipse for about 8 or 9 years. I'm the contributor to the Eclipse refactoring engine. And Eclipse is very mature, and it was designed from the beginning to be extensible. So especially if you're looking in the way how the refactoring engine is designed, you know, Eclipse got a lot of their inspiration from the Smalltalk refactoring engine, which is another project that started at our group in 1995 and was the first mature industrial quality strength kind of like a tool for refactoring. It was for Smalltalk. So Eclipse got a lot of the good ideas from the Smalltalk refactoring browser. And let me tell you about a couple of those ideas. So for example, it has a very nice rewriting capability. So it's a very nice rewriting engine. Me as a programmer for new refactoring, I don't have to worry about, you know, these are the syntactical changes at the code level. You know, I don't have to say, well, replace this text from position 33 to position 38. But I know I'm operating and I'm doing manipulation at AST level. So I replace this AST node with that AST node, and there is a smart AST rewrite object that takes care about, you know, merging a lot of changes. So in a file, I will have many, many changes, right? And I don't have to worry about merging all those changes myself. I just say, these are the AST node manipulations. I can replace a node with another node. You know, I can create programmatically new nodes. And then once I give them to this service object, to this AST rewrite, then it takes care about, you know, all the merging of the changes. And
So in some sense, that allows them almost, let's say, the power user of Eclipse to even write his own refactorings, because it's such a great abstraction that they put in there.
So it's a very good abstraction for writing new refactorings. The other good thing is that these are decently documented, and there are several examples of such. So for somebody who is new and just say, I want to write my first refactoring, now you look in the Eclipse code base, it's open source, you have many, many dozens of refactorings or transformations that are similar to refactorings, and I can look at the examples, and this is how I would, this is something very similar to what I want to do. So, you know, as with any other thing, we learn from examples.
Okay.
And it's several examples there.
So now the good news is that you're actually one of the winners of the Software Innovation Foundation Awards this year from Microsoft, and you've started to look into Visual Studio to do some of the refactoring work. So do we see in some sense many more, is Visual Studio moving in a direction that you can actually also do refactorings easier, and so that we'll see some of your work in some sense appearing for Visual Studio as well?
So I just want to thank Microsoft. Yes, this was a good opportunity for me, and this is a good thing that I got this award, and I've been looking forward for a while to also start impacting also the Visual Studio community and the C# community. And the good news is this is no longer a secret, has been already announced publicly. Visual Studio is moving toward the direction where they are exposing some of the APIs so that third-party contributors like myself or other people can start contributing with refactorings or with any other nice tools that are integrated into the IDE. So what the Visual Studio team is doing, like, managed by Ken and Liu in Redmond, they are exposing a lot of the rewriting and also a lot of the program analysis that compiler is doing. They are exposing it as a set of services, a set of APIs, which will make it much easier for people like me to start writing refactorings for Visual Studio. And I'm very excited about this opportunity because, of course, Visual Studio and Microsoft is very interested in parallelism and multi-core.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of work that, you know, the good thing about Visual Studio is that it's a great tool, it's a great moving in the right direction, and there's a lot of room for improvement. So
I think it would be wonderful to get your help and, in some sense, your expertise as the Übermaster of refactoring and get that into Visual Studio as well. So as far as I understand, you also had a paper here at ICSI presenting some of the refactoring work. Mm-hmm. So what technical work did you actually present here, and what's the new thing in there?
Mm-hmm. So that's correct. We had a paper in the first refactoring session on Wednesday. The student, Frederick Jolstein, is the one who did, of course, most of the work. I was the mentor, and I also wrote a lot of code with him, but he gets the credit for doing most of the work. This is a refactoring. It's in the toolset. It's in our toolset of 8 or 9 refactors that we have right now for concurrency and parallelism. But it's one of those refactors we call enabling for parallelism. This is not introducing parallelism, but it's enabling the code to later use multi-thread.
Yeah.
The particular refactoring that we presented was a refactoring that converts a mutable class into an immutable class. Now, if I take a mutable class and I make it immutable, then I can share it with all the threads, and they don't have to use any threading to access because they get the read-only kind of view of the code. So they can all share happily without requiring any synchronization and any locking. So you get no logs, no deadlocks, no headaches, essentially.
Okay, so, but if there are now 2 threads mutating this class before you rewrote it, then how can you preserve the semantics if actually the data structure was mutated? Do you replicate? Do you do a copy on write in order to for the new immutable class?
Yes. Yeah, so this is a very good observation. So essentially the technique that we are doing, it's a copy on write. So the tool is called immutator. It detects, you start from this target class which contains some mutations, and we are detecting automatically, these are all the mutators that can change the whole transit. So this is the whole deep state. You know, these are not only mutations that happen by assigning to the references of the fields in this class, but, you know, like deep down in the whole object hierarchy, that, you know, all the state that can be reached from this, starting from the initial fields of the class. So we are detecting those mutators. We are converting those mutators into factory methods. So now when you have a thread, or you have a message that is sent to this immutable class and wants to invoke those mutator methods, now we are not changing the state of that particular object. We are creating another object. We are returning another object, which has the old state plus the new mutation.
Yeah.
So,
but then how do you deal, for example, with the situation that now you have 2 different objects, and if you use them in hash tables, they get different identity because the hash code might be different, or do you actually preserve the hash code? So how does that work?
So this is part of the client code. Now you have to change the client code to use the class in a mutable fashion.
This
is a very interesting second half of the refactoring. This is the part that has not been addressed yet, and we are actually currently thinking and will be working on this part very, very closely. And indeed, this is one of the things, right? So now if you have, it's one of those examples, so this is a very good illustration. Now I have a client code who had an immutable object and put it in a hash table. Now if I get if I perform a mutation on it, now I don't preserve the identity.
Yeah.
I get a different copy, so then, you know, whatever else was put in the hash table. So this is one of those preconditions for the client code. If the client code uses the immutable object or uses objects in this fashion, then you cannot use immutability in this sense. And again, this is the kind of refactoring that will be applied judiciously by a programmer. So the programmer, I don't see the programmer pressing a magic button and say, take all my classes in my program and make them immutable. That doesn't make any sense.
I think that's in some sense a wonderful conclusion. We still need in some sense the smartness of the developer, but you give in some sense tools that make them so much more effective by using refactoring tools.
Correct. So the paradigm in which I'm working and my view of programming is that there are some things that the programmer is much better at than tools. You know, the programmer has this high-level understanding, this creativity, this understanding of the problem domain. Tools will never be able to get to that high-level understanding of the problem domain, essentially. So you kind of combine the strengths of the programmer with the strengths of the tool. So strength, programmer is good at this high-level understanding. Tool are good at the low level, kind of like checking, searching through large piles of code, munching through lots of code, doing all this tedious rewriting. So when you combine the strengths of the programmer with the strengths of the tool, you get into an ecosystem which is much, much more powerful than either programmer alone or tool alone.
I think that's a wonderful conclusive statement. Yeah. Thanks a lot, Danny. It was a real fun talking to you, and I hope that we see your refactorings pretty soon.
Yes, it was very good talking to you guys. If for people who want to learn more about our work, look at either refactoring.info, which is a portal which I maintain. This is about the community of refactorings. You'll see many people who are working in this community. And especially if you want to learn more about our tools for concurrency, look in refactoringinfo/tools. And that's where you'll find all these refactorings. We have 8 or 9 refactorings there for parallelism. And soon enough, if you wait about a year or so, then you don't have to look in refactoring info. Hopefully you just get your Visual Studio 2011 or 2012.
Woo!
Look in the refactoring menu and you should be able to see some of refactoring for concurrency in Visual Studio.
Nice. Thanks, Danny. That's really cool. Thanks a lot for your time, and good luck for your further work.
Okay. Cheers. Thanks.